It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is back. Kevin Marks joins us. Lots to talk about, including Facebook's quarterly results and what it all means. It's up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 311, recorded Wednesday, July 29th, 2015. Tubes of Fat. This Week in Google is brought to you by JustWorks.com. JustWorks helps businesses take care of their benefits, payroll, and HR with intuitive software. Visit JustWorks.com, enter the offer code TWIG to receive 15% off your first year of services. And by PagerDuty. PagerDuty decreases alerting noise for IT operations and developers to ensure that the right engineers are notified at the right time. Increase your uptime and sign up for a 14-day free trial at PagerDuty.com/TWIT. And by LegalZoom. Protect your family with a last will or living trust today. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but can connect you with an independent attorney. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TWIG in the referral box at checkout for your special discount. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. He's back, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff Jarvis is here. Yay! It's just not, we had a great show last week. It was a lot of fun.
Are you still using Google Fi?
Yeah. Got it right here.
I watched that.
We had, Ron Amadio was here. And who else did we have besides Ron?
Kevin Toefel,
that's right. So it was a great, but it's not the same without Jeffrey Jarvis, I got to say. Mm-hmm. Oh, you find it too.
Well, no, I haven't yet. I put the case on.
Let's talk about Fi.
Then I'll explain that briefly.
Also with us, Kevin Marks, former Googler himself. He's also been at Apple, where he was instrumental in QuickTime. He's been at British Telecom. He's a Tumblr. KevinMarks.com.
It's not the same without birds behind him.
I know.
I'm sorry. It was going to be 102 degrees in San Jose today, so I came up to San Francisco early, and I'm hiding in a cupboard in Mozilla doing this before Homebrew Website Club tonight.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's way too hot right now. Although San Francisco always has a little bit of air conditioning, thank goodness.
Yeah, so San Francisco is not still 30 degrees cooler than San Jose.
So. Yeah. So have you done Fi? Are you thinking about Fi, Kevin?
So here's my thing. So I got it. Oh, yeah. You got it, Kevin?
I haven't. I've got the Nexus 6, but I haven't looked at Fi.
Oh. So we harassed.
I've got a phone on T-Mobile, so changing it would end up costing me money, I think.
Yeah, I don't think you'd have an advantage if you're a T-Mobile customer, to be honest, as I was. We harassed Matt Cutts till he harassed somebody else, and strangely, we both got our invitations.
Yes. Oh, cool.
I think Jason got an invitation, too. He's deciding whether to do it.
I did, yeah. And my lighting's all weird over here, so this is about all you get.
Okay. The dark, Jason.
I know. I'm sorry. I got the invite, and the more I look over it, the more I'm like, you know, the $30 plan that I'm on right now with 5 gigs of, air quotes, unlimited data versus what I would get on Fi. Like, I find myself on the fence suddenly, and I was dead set to do it initially, and now I don't know if I should.
Which makes me wonder if Fi was going to be more. And for whatever reason, Google couldn't make it more.
Yeah.
Because it isn't spectacular in any respect.
No, but I still want to try it. But here's my problem. I always have a problem. I thought it was perfect. So I went and did a Google event in London.
Yeah.
And to all the speakers, they gave Nexus 6s.
Nice.
I thought, perfect. I have my Nexus 6 with my AT&T.
Oh, and you can do a Fi 6.
And I can do a Fi 6. And this is just perfect. I'm so happy. So then I find out that, no, I had the international Nexus 6. It only works with the U.S. Nexus 6.
Now, we could fix that, I think.
Are you sure it's different? Not different chips?
Oh, maybe it is different chips. If it is, you're screwed. Because there's
a different chips.
There, you can download a Fi.
No. It doesn't have certain antennas.
Oh, so yes.
But radios.
It's the frequencies.
Yeah. So
why would that's terrible? They gave you
a
useless...
It's very nice of them. Jeez, they give them, a whole Nexus 6. Yeah. So I call the Fi people, and they say, we can't do anything for you, mister. I call the Nexus 6 people. They can't do anything, mister. I, wrote some stupid messages. And I'm beggars, choosers, for God's sakes.
Is there anybody watching the show in Europe who would like to trade a U.S. edition Nexus 6 for a European
edition. I'll figure it out. Well, but here's the other. So now I'm looking with some greedy lust. We're going to talk about it, I think, at the either the OnePlus 2,
right,
which looks really interesting. I watched the entire
I am excited about the OnePlus 2.
Oh, you made it through that without it crashing on you? Okay.
No, I did.
Good to know.
I didn't see any of the codes.
I know, right?
And then I, and also the new Moto X.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, and they're both priced very well, under $400.
And Samsung's having an event next month, soon, yeah, a couple of weeks.
So do I, you know, get a OnePlus 2, which does look very appealing, and make that my AT&T phone, and then make my Nexus 6 my Fi phone?
There we go.
Okay, so let me tell you the pros and cons.
Okay.
Jason already outlined one, which is it is not cheaper. Jason has that oddball T-Mobile plan, the go play as you go plan, which at $30 a month is probably the cheapest plan I've ever heard of. You only get 100 minutes, but who uses their phone anymore?
And with Hangouts, VoIP, right, you know, data calling, that's my way around it. And
right.
Yeah, so that's all I pay is 30.
And then you have unlimited text and data. So that's not how Fi works. It's $20 for unlimited voice and text, and then you pay $10 a gigabyte for data, but you only pay as you go. So that's maybe okay. It still has the T-Mobile international capabilities. It looks like they're exactly duplicating those,
which is good. So those are
great. I used that when I was in Europe, and it was fabulous. It's not fast, but it's something.
Well, it's throttled at 128 kilobits.
256 is what Fi says.
Oh, they switched it now. It was 128 last time I tried it. And in theory, you can upgrade it, but actually I couldn't get that to work.
I paid for the upgrade, and it wasn't much faster, so I don't recommend it.
Okay. Ooh. Okay.
But nevertheless, it's enough to check your email. I used it for?
You use it for photos, yeah.
Photos, exactly. So every night I'd get home, and I have a phone that has Wi-Fi, so I would copy the photos over to the phone and just let it run overnight because it takes forever. But at least they were backed up to photos drop at a time. And that was like a backup, which I like.
What about like maps? How well did it work? Is it slow
okay.
on loading
You know,
maps?
It's kind of fun while you're cruising. You can
You
can see where you are. Although what I ended up doing is getting the Here maps, which are free, and pre-downloading.
Mm-hmm. You can pre-download on Google Maps. It's a bit hard to do.
Yeah, and it seems like they
expire. You got a lot to do.
Fire after one.
No, I mean I've used that before. I've used that quite successfully, but they hid it, so you've got to do some ridiculous search query and then hit a button that appears magically.
Okay.
As opposed to it being impressed anymore, but it is still there. And it works fairly well. It still can't do routing for you because the routing requires them to talk to the server, but it can show you where you are.
But that's the kind of thing, the data might be sufficient for things like routing information and traffic information. Yeah. So if you don't have to download the whole
map. If you've got the maps cached, then that works. And it'll let you cache, you select an area and it caches that area. So if you know where you're going, you can cache those bits.
It's kind of fun because you can see yourself going down the river and see where you are. Yes. Like, so there's a point in which we are in, we're going by Bratislava, and we're in whatever that country is, Slovakia. I don't know. Anyway, it's the former Czechoslovakia. It was the Slovakia, I guess, part of it.
Yeah, it's Slovakia now, yeah.
And so it's kind of cool. You go, we're in Bratislava. Oh, okay. And when we got in the Danube out of the canal, the Main-Danube canal, I could say, we're in the Danube now. And that was kind of fun. There was another guy doing the same thing.
Right.
So that's kind of fun. Anyway, but that's off the point. The biggest negative on Fi, I think, is that you kind of have to mess up your Google Voice account.
Well, I already did because when I signed up for it, it asked me at that point, do you want a port? You can't go back. And I didn't know I had the choice. I didn't think I had a choice to get a new number, idiotically, so I've already done it. But I didn't use many voice features.
And some of the features are still there. For instance, the forwarding is going on, but the call screening is gone. I can't do the contacts groups screening. I used to have different voicemails for different groups, family, friends.
What about the visual voicemail?
Visual voicemail's still there. By the way, Google said there's a 49% improvement in visual voicemail transcriptions last week, and that's true.
Really?
They're perfect now, or almost.
Wow.
Noticeable.
Try this again.
Noticeable.
Have they retranscribed the old ones?
No. But have you noticed that, Jason? Is it a lot better for you? I was stunned.
I have now that you now that you mention it, because I actually did see one come through the other day. I was like, wow, I can actually read that start to finish.
It's language.
That's weird. I just thought it was a strange deal, but then I put the story of the rundown today. I was like, oh, it's a thing.
Yeah.
Figured it out.
It's kind of stunningly accurate. Like I couldn't believe it. So I'm still getting, as you can see, visual voicemail in my Hangouts. They do suggest, weirdly, that you not use Hangouts, but use the Google Messenger program.
Yeah, I heard you say that last week's show.
I haven't seen any reason not to use Hangouts, frankly. They say that, but everything works fine. So even if you get a new number for Fi, even if you don't say, yeah, port my Google Voice number, you lose Google Voice. So I feel like that's the biggest negative of all. It may presage the end of Google Voice, or it may just be, well, we own these numbers. You know, your Google Voice number is owned by Google, so we'll just use those.
Yeah. I mean, my problem with I can't, I've got an AT&T unlimited grandfathered. So I don't want to lose that.
Don't want to lose that.
B, so let's say I switch to Fi, and then, you know, I lust after the OnePlus. Well, then I'm off Fi because it'll only work on the Nexus 6.
I wouldn't switch if I were you.
So switching entirely just doesn't make sense, but I do want to try it.
I just don't get what Google is doing this for, because there's no, you know, it's not like the gigabit internet, which reinvents internet and forces the other carriers or the other ISPs to go along. This doesn't do anything. Oh, one more thing that would be valuable. If you work in some areas or go in some areas where Sprint is good but T-Mobile's not, and or vice versa, the fact that it is T-Mobile plus Sprint plus Wi-Fi might be of value to you.
Well, here's the other question I have for you, Leo. So I get pissed off every single time I walk into my Starbucks, I check my email, oh, crap, it's found the AT&T. I have to go to the web. I have to load Google. I have to say, yes, I won't do anything horrible and illegal. I've wasted four times. The latte is up. And I might as well not have bothered. It just turned off the Wi-Fi. Will Fi at least automatically sign on to its own damned Wi-Fi?
That's an interesting question. It says it will automatically join open access points.
That's because those are open access points, but then they middle box you to death so that it isn't actually an open access
but I'm
point.
Wondering
it,
since it's
destroying
Google's,
the world view. So Google's it, I can't ones stand seem to not be like that. But I suspect they will actually have a there'll be password and do it in the background.
I've had a very good suggestion for 2 years on Twig, if I do say so myself, which is that they come up with a universal standard that says, I hereby agree I will not do these 10 horrible things on your Wi-Fi. And when my phone comes into your Wi-Fi, just go ahead and friggin' sign on. And if you want to show me an ad on a web page, okay. But to make me stop, oh, crap.
You know what you want? I got to do that. You want a Windows phone.
No.
Windows phone does that.
You're kidding.
Yes.
just say yes to everything. Well, the problem is, so there's a sort of protocol problem here. So the problem is when the ZeroConf stuff was being invented, The value was it lets you connect to things without having to type anything into boxes. And this was a brilliant thing that Stuart Cheshire came up with at Apple. He basically said, why is IP networking so hard compared with Apple Talk? We need to make it as easy. And he sat down and worked out how to do it and wrote a bunch of specs and then shipped it on Mac, and it's now universal. But then a lot of people said, but we'd actually like people to log in. We'd like to know what's going on.
Yeah.
And so this industry of hideous middle boxes sprung up. Where they will give you a supposed internet connection, but actually everything you touch turns to shit because they've rooted all the web through their horrible browser. And horrible things happen. So your phone thinks it has a Wi-Fi connection, starts downloading podcasts, and it gets a web page instead.
Yeah, it's not getting it. Right.
And you know, all kinds of horrible stuff like that happens. So now the OS vendors have had to put up their own websites and when they first connect, they try and load a page on their own site and see if it's the page they're expecting. And if it isn't, they don't switch the net connection. They put up that little box that says, you should log into this site now.
Oh, that's what's happening. That's interesting.
There was a bug a couple of years back where the page that Apple was serving for that went down. And every iPhone everywhere suddenly thought that all Wi-Fi's needed to be logged into even when they didn't.
Oy.
So that becomes this horrible single point of failure. So they fixed that, but Google does the same thing. If you actually look at the packets, Google tries to load something on Google's site, and then you get that little notification alert. So the problem is that these people are explicitly breaking the protocol on purpose. Now, back when Stuart was inventing this protocol, he did define a way for them to put up a dialog box along the way. But the only thing that ever implemented that was the macOS version that he shipped, and no one else implemented that. So that didn't end up as part of the spec. And so we're stuck with this. Half the internet connection points you try and connect to are lying to you, and your phone has to sit there and sniff it and try and work it out before it does anything. So
the term for this is captive portal detection.
Captive portal, yes. Well, yeah. Captive portal is a euphemism for crappy middle box that intercepts your connection. Yes. But exactly, you're a captive of the Wi-Fi you're connecting to.
Yeah.
So
I have to say, Google or Android does a better job of this than the iPhone. The iPhone will often silently join it, never give you a notice that you're on this, not necessarily pull up the web page, which I think it's supposed to do.
They do that. I think they will put up the thing now.
It takes forever. No, it's slow, and it takes forever. At least Google puts up a dialog box in your notifications that says you need tap this to log in.
Yeah.
And it usually does it a lot faster. I because Lisa uses an iPhone and I use Android, and almost always she was sitting there going, I don't know what's going on. I'm not getting any internet. And I said, yeah, you just, wait.
Yeah,
it will pop up.
But also, a lot of those captive portals are crap, and they're running on like some appalling little piece of nonsense on the router.
Right, right.
And so they're not serving a very good web page. I've had that, where was it?
Happens at every hotel.
Yeah, hotels and railway stations are particularly bad at this because they're like, oh, somebody sold them a box that they can serve ads to people. It's like, I'm in a railway station. I want to be here for 3 minutes, but I want to know when the train's leaving.
Airports do the same thing.
And I have to wait 4 minutes for you to connect to it. You're not actually serving me here.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yes.
New York subways now have some Wi-Fi, and you've got 30 seconds, and I just want to do one thing. I just want to send message. No,
you need to log into the Port Authority's special web page.
So, there is a camp. The EFF has a campaign for this saying make Wi-Fi actually open, but
no, it's not going to happen.
The old days. What do we call it? Not gun running. What was it called when you drove down the street and found Wi-Fi?
War driving.
War driving. I'm on a gun run. I like it better than war driving.
Those sounds good.
Those were the good old days, huh?
Yeah.
Wow, cool. Another person has a router. Wow, neat. Yeah. We're in the fraternity together.
Well, now Comcast is doing this, aren't they, with Xfinity?
Oh god, that's another nightmare. I accidentally signed into one of those ones, and it meant that every time I went out in public,
from
my
now
phone
on,
working.
Yeah.
Well, just forget it.
And half of them are down. So basically, it makes your phone unusable as you wander the world because they've joined an Xfinity hotspot that's not doing anything.
Yeah. Well, I have one answer here, folks. I just received it.
Google Fi. Oh, you got your karma.
I got my karma.
That's cute.
It's very nice looking. I went down and they were nice enough to give me one at the Karma offices in New York.
Oh.
And Karma's very, so it's simple little, so I'll turn it on here.
This was a Kickstarter, right?
Were they? I don't know. Karma's been around for a while.
Karma Go is what you got.
So the deal is that you pay the same thing as Fi. And this is, you only pay for the gigs you use. No monthly play. You buy this for $149. But then there's no monthly plan whatsoever. You just pay for the gigs you use. What's really interesting about Karma is that it's social. So let's say that you, Kevin, sign up for a Karma account and you don't own one of these. When you go sit in the airport and somebody around you has a Karma on, you go in and you use some of your gigs through their Karma. I won't even notice.
Oh, I see. So
I won't
like
even
fun.
Notice.
That's clever.
Yeah. Yeah, so I won't notice, but because I've made mine available to you, I get rewarded with, I don't know, like 10 megs or something. And when I bring new customers on, if I use the code on Twitter and you sign up because of me, I get like 100 megs or something.
Have you
like
used
that.
This yet?
Yeah, I've used it.
How fast is it?
It's good. It's Sprint.
Gosh darn it.
It's Sprint. Well, because they've got to negotiate with the other companies, and that will come. I think the others will wise up and realize that they can't just sell you their own stuff. Because I canceled my Verizon MiFi because it was wildly expensive, and I was pissed off of spending all this money on an in case use that I didn't use.
So how much? So, it's $149.
And then $10 a gig. Is,
what's the battery life like? Because the challenge with all these MiFi type things is they think, oh, we'll make it really small. It's like, no, make it a little bit bigger. It's in my bag anyway.
Yeah.
But make the battery last 48 hours.
I haven't fully tested it, but it goes on standby.
It would be nice if it lasted 24 hours, 12 hours even.
Yeah, it's good. Nice. I forget what they promise it is, but it's so far it's been good.
It doesn't need a screen. You know, you could put a battery the size of the thing that I carry around anyway in it, and it would still last a lot better. But instead,
but I can also this big. Yeah. The other truth is, I have in my bag. I have my Google Fi battery, and I just plug it into there if I need to.
Start carrying those batteries around.
Yeah. No. Well,
I knew anyway.
We're all carrying 7,000 milliamp batteries around.
I know. It'd
be nice
it's
if
so
the
funny.
Wi-Fi had one built in. Like, they should do the Karma 2, which is actually a battery that also does that.
Well, that's a good idea. So here's the deal. Well, you need one of those cases for the Karma that is a battery. each time you share the referral link, your friend gets $10 in their account, and you get $10.
Wow.
Each Karma connection is available up to 8 devices, either your own or people around you. Karma ties data to the person, not the device, a feature they call social bandwidth. This allows each person to only share access to their network, never their data. So everyone picks up their own tab. Each time someone hops on your Karma connection, both parties get 100 megabytes. You for sharing and them for getting started.
How much is data? Is it $10 a gigabyte?
$14 a gigabyte.
Oh, it's a little pricey.
But if you buy, that's if you want to buy 1 gig. If you buy 10 gigs, it's $99.
And but again, then after no that, is it how much per, like, then you buy it in chunks
each
time?
You buy another 10 gigs. Ah. The point is that it's because you, it never expires, it's because it's there's like none of that BS. It just, you know, so I've got like 20 gigs. There was a special half-off deal right before I got this. And so I was, what the heck? I got 20 gigs waiting for me, and I can take 3 years to use it.
Right.
Won't matter. Battery life, 9 days on sleep mode, 6 to 8 hours in use.
Yeah, it's like
the
other MiFi.
That's the thing I'd like to double. You know,
yeah.
It's like make
speeds,
the
upload 2 to 3 megs, down peak 10 megs, download 6 to 8 megs, peak 25 megs. So that's the Karma story.
I'd like to
very
see
very nice people.
I'd like to see that. You know what? I'm going to order one and
yeah,
and so you can let me know. I'll let you know.
So this
I think. The point for both this and Google Fi, the only thing I want to say because Google Fi is that what they are pressing the industry to do is to forget this ridiculous arbitrage we are forced into where we buy things we don't use. Like the cable industry does that, right? How many channels do I never use? And how much bandwidth on this stuff and how many minutes of phone calls back in the day did I pay for that I never used? And that's what's BS. And that's what these companies are pressing the industry to get out.
So I just bought one because I'm a sucker. Yeah. And I tweeted my code out. So if you want to get $10 off.
Fortune.
Well, we'll see. It would be nice to get some free data.
I got like $50.
Yeah. But I did tweet the referral. So if you do want to buy it, you get $10 off. Go to my Twitter. We'll reserve judgment on the Karma. But I think it sounds like it's a good deal. It's better than the Verizon MiFi.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So this is connects to something. This week, Rosie, my wife, said she was fed up with her phone and wanted a new phone. And it was like, okay, yeah, you've had it a couple of years. Let's see. And so we went through. It's like, well, what do you want from your phone that you haven't got from that one? And she basically said, I want more space to read with bigger type. Because, you know, she's her eyesight's not wonderful. And, you know, I have that problem too. And so I said, oh, well, you can get you an Nexus 6. And she looked at that and said, no, I want something bigger than that. It's like,
what?
Oh. They don't make phones bigger than that. Then I had a brainwave. I said,
tablet.
But there's the Nexus 7,
yeah,
which I can get for $150 now.
Yeah.
I'll get you one of those. And so now she's got, you know, she's got something this big to read on, which will fit in her purse and battery lasts a day. And she's still got a phone for phone calls.
And then you put Skype on it, or what do you have on it? Hangouts? What do you use for the phone calls?
Hangouts and the Hangouts dialer with the Google Voice that works fine.
As much like a phone as anything, right?
Yeah. The annoying part is there's two things that are annoying. One is that Facebook does not respect the make the text larger setting on Android. So you have to run some third-party hack to increase the text size in Facebook, which is, you know, classic. And the other Facebook thing that is what do you call it? WhatsApp doesn't work on tablets because it insists you have a phone number.
Oh, that's so. Yeah, that's right.
Which is crazy. Which means
there's a number of things like that. There's going to be more things like that, I think.
So the SMSs get through with Hangouts, but the WhatsApp messages don't get through. And Facebook, you have to like jury rig with random hacks to make the text bigger.
So I got one other question for phones and you guys.
Yes,
and you too, Jason. Which one should I lust after, if anyone? The OnePlus 2 or the new Moto X?
Yeah, that was my next question. That was the other question. I'm not buying you a phone this week because there's a whole bunch of new stuff coming out.
Right. Jason?
Oh, this is thrown to me.
Moto X. Don't get... Okay, here's the argument against... Oh, I'm sorry, Jason.
No?
let me say the argument...
No, I'm going to buy time. Answer, and then I'll come back with my answer.
This is the argument against the OnePlus 2. I'm a OnePlus 2 fan. The argument in favor of, if in my opinion, is it's a Type-C connector. The argument against, no NFC. It is the same.
It's a big one.
It's the same screen as last year, which is not a great screen, but it's okay. They have improved the camera, but we haven't seen it yet, so we're going to have to see what the camera is like. To me, the biggest issue is crap customer service. If you have a problem with it, you're out of luck. So that's the biggest issue to me. I'm going to
their event in Times Square on Friday.
Well, you might know someone that might help you.
We'll see.
But that's to me. Now, the battery life's going to be awesome. They're increasing it 10% over last year. Last year's model with the same screen got 20 hours easy for me.
Right. Does the dual SIM matter to you at all? International?
It shouldn't matter to you either unless you're in China.
Oh. Where it matters in China, to some. India, they use dual SIM like crazy.
Yeah.
That's what they had to do.
India and China, because you move around from area to area. And so you need both SIMs. I don't think you could use dual SIMs like, okay, I have a German SIM and I leave it in my phone when I'm in America. I don't know if that would work. Maybe it would.
Why not?
I don't know. Would that work?
Dual SIMs is two phone numbers, right?
Yeah. I don't know how that would work.
So what about the Moto X?
I think that's going to be the one to get.
Really? Oh.
Yeah, now, or the G. So here's one way to go with go cheap. The G is basically like last year's Moto X, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm.
But cheap. It's $160 or
so. Is it little? Is it like the little Moto
X? Yeah, it's little. It's only 720p. It's a smaller screen.
But there were people complaining that the Moto X is big.
Yes.
So the little phone fans haven't got anything. So the G would be the answer for them. Okay.
Then the Moto X is going to be bigger. They really made the, you know, one of the reason people liked Moto X is because it was 4.7 inches, the original one. Then they went for 5.2. So the OnePlus 2 is 5.5 inches. The new Moto X Pure Edition, which is the only one you can get in the U.S., is 5.7 inches. And then they did the thing that everybody does. They went to a quad display, quad HD display, which means battery life's going to suck again.
Uh-oh.
Because the more pixels you push, the worse the battery life gets, right?
Right, that was the thing that was putting me off getting Rosie a new phone was that she, you know, her problem wasn't that the pixels were too big, it was more the pixels were too small
right.
and the device wasn't displaying them properly.
Right.
So getting even more pixels wouldn't help. Whereas you know this thing's 1080p, which is plenty of pixels, but you have to persuade it to draw big enough that you can read it, which is another little song and dance you have to do.
Yeah, you have to kind of trick it into that, don't you? But Android does have a way to increase font sizes very easily.
And it does, but as I say, but Facebook ignores it.
Yeah.
So if you're using Facebook, which you was, I had to run Facebook. Some text the, larger thing.
The new Moto X does use an LCD display this time, which is interesting.
Not OLED.
So it's not OLED, so I have to imagine that means some of the cool kind of touchless... You know, screen, ambient screen stuff that the old Moto X's do that a lot of people love. I'm not sure that you're going to see as much of that here.
Another argument in favor of the OnePlus 2 is 4 gigs of RAM, which in my experience on Android, more memory does help.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
That helps with speed.
Okay.
Argument against maybe pro or con moot is the Snapdragon 810. The phones with the Snapdragon 810s to date have been really bad. This chip gets too hot. The HTC had to underclock in order to get it to operate coolly. I don't know about the Snapdragon 810. Samsung actually avoided it because they couldn't get it to work. Although the Samsung Exynos that they used in the Galaxy S6 is just as bad or worse. So we'll see. They have a new variant of the 2.1 variant of the Snapdragon 810. So we'll see. I do like the various backs, but Moto X does that too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no quick charging. That's a problem as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. Although if your battery life's 20 hours, maybe that doesn't matter. No wireless charging. I do like wireless. But again, if you're only charging it at night,
I don't care.
Not as big a deal. The Pure Edition will have a 3,000 milliamp hour. That's a big battery for the Moto X.
Too bad we don't get the Play Edition, which is like 36 or 37.
That's the one I want, right? Yeah. But that's outside U.S.
Why aren't they doing that? I don't get it.
It's weird.
It's Lenovo. They don't. I don't know. The Pure Edition will be 3 gigs of RAM. There'll be a 64 gig variant. That's what you'll want. You don't want to do 16 for sure. You know, I would say 21 megapixel camera, rah, rah, except that so does the HTC, and that's terrible. So the number of megapixels is not, it's just unknown. We don't know what that camera is going to do. I think if you're thinking about getting one of these two phones, I'd wait till it comes out and see the reviews.
I'd agree. Neither of them, to be completely honest, neither of them came out and I was like, oh my, I think I have to do this. This is irresistible. Even though they're both really priced really well, that's a good price point and something that we're kind of more and more kind of getting conditioned to expect high end, specs and performance.
They're about both
at a mid range price.
Yeah, they're about half the price of the high end stuff.
But I mean, like last year with the OnePlus One, you saw what you got and you saw the price that it came at. And it was hard to deny that that's a really good deal. And, I should just get one because it's a great deal. This year, both of these, they're fine. I feel like there's some kind of, you have to make, there's a little bit of a trade-off as a result. And not nearly as an instant,
a lot of
like,
people
need to have.
Should look at the Moto G, believe it or not.
Well, the Moto G is the most popular Motorola phone in the past couple of years. It's their highest selling phone. So it makes sense.
So Leo, you still didn't like, I there was a sale on the, what's the little tiny Moto, the ear thing?
Oh no, don't get the hint. They've replaced that. Replaced
that's
that anyway already.
So I did order it and then I'm returning it because I didn't even open it. Because I looked at it and I thought, no, it's not going to stay in my, I have weird ears. Nothing fits in my
ear. It's not going to work in weird ears. That's for sure. So let's see, flip shell. Should I get a flip shell? Yeah,
Not actually going to order this now, are you?
Yeah, actually. I like the Moto, the last Moto G. I think you get graved. Let's see. Take that, Jeff. Okay. Put that on the back. That'll be nice. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That'll be good. Memory. Now, this is the key on this one is you want to go with a 16 gig, obviously.
Especially on the Moto G.
2 gig RAM. What other options? I can have a greeting when it signs on. I like Moto Maker. I'm glad that they've kept that around. And I can do seashells. Hello, Leo. That's so stupid.
How about hello, handsome?
Oh, yeah. Now I'm happy. Hello, handsome. $254 for that 16 gig version. 16 is a little light. That would be the one thing that would really worry me on this.
It is light. My wife has a 16 gig Moto X, the first one, and is always running out of room because of photos and videos, videos primarily.
Yeah. So you can make different designs. Moto Maker is great. Not anymore in the U.S., of course. The G, in a way, to me, hits the sweet spot for most normal people. And I was surprised at the number of kind of high-end geeks who also have the G and love it. It's water resistant, 13 megapixel camera with dual flash, color bouncing flash. It's a 5-inch 720p display. 5 is a good size. That's a nice size. They say all day battery. I wish they'd be better on these battery life. Yep. Oh, slot for an SD card.
Yeah, yes.
I didn't see that. With 32 up to 32 gigs.
All of them have SD cards. Mm-hmm.
That's funny because none of the feature phones really. The OnePlus has an SD card.
No. Sorry, all of Motorola's newest.
Does the
newest
X?
Yes,
the X has it too. Yes,
yes,
up to 128.
Because everybody else is turning their back on it, and the rumor is that even Samsung on the Note 5 will. I suppose if I watched All About Android every Tuesday night on this network, I would know this stuff.
Plug.
Yeah. Hosted by that great guy, Jason Howell. Mm. I would know this stuff.
Keep it coming.
Yeah.
Keep it coming.
Yeah. Kevin Toefel apparently says that this Nessus 6 camera is the same camera as the Moto G.
As the Moto G.
Moto G? I'm happy. This is not a bad camera. Yeah, that would be okay.
I'd say it's not bad. It's not amazing, but it's not
what's
bad.
What's the best phone camera alive?
The Galaxy S6.
Yeah, between that and the LG G4 right now. Well, yeah, and the iPhone 6.
I was underwhelmed by the G4. I know that Miriam and lots of people really are crazy about the G4. I was not impressed. The G6, I mean, S6 blows me away. The iPhone 6 is pretty good, although it's half the megapixels. And then, of course, there's Nokia. I mean, if you want to get a Windows phone, those Nokia cameras are very good. How come you don't have an iPhone, Jeff? You seem like an iPhone guy.
No. I live la vida Google. I've got my Chromebook. So my Chromebook microphone is not working right now, so I can't do Hangouts on it.
Miriam practically slapped me because I said I like the iPhone 6 camera. She says, no, iOS. OIS, optical image stabilization. She says, you must have that. I don't notice the loss of that. All right, let's take a break. We got lots more. Kevin Marks is here, joining us from the Mozilla headquarters in San Francisco, where he's getting ready for an event tonight. Tell us about that.
So tonight we've got an event called Homebrew Website Club, which we have every 2 weeks. We normally have it at Mozilla in San Francisco. We also have locations in other cities. Tonight there's one in Portland, and there was one in Göteborg in Sweden.
Wow.
Which, or Gothenburg, if you want to say it in English, which has obviously already finished.
Göteborg.
but also we've had them in Chicago, New York, and basically it's based on the original Homebrew Computing Club idea, which was where famously the Apple was invented, where you get together and talk about what you've built on your website, what you'd like to build on your website, and you know, work together on that. And it's part of the indie web stuff, and it's we've been doing it for probably 18 months now, maybe a couple of years. We normally get a handful of people coming around and trying stuff out. The number varies a fair bit, but I enjoy it, and I recommend people come along if they're interested. So San Francisco tonight, 5:30 at Mozilla, Portland 5:30. I'm not quite sure where it is. Look up on the indiewebcamp.com website, and it's at the bottom of the page.
Jeff Jarvis also here from City University of New York, where he teaches journalism. I have a lot of journalism stories we can talk about.
Oh,
it was kind of an interesting time the last few weeks. I'm sure you...
Gawker?
Yeah. And more. New York Times. The sad end of the line for the gray lady? Mm-hmm. Or not. Anyway, we'll talk about some more stuff like that. But first, can I talk about JustWorks? JustWorks.com. If you're a business person, you know that one of the things your employees want and expect is getting their paychecks on time. And an HR department that actually provides HR. I know this because I finally realized I had to go get some help when Dane complained to me. You still haven't paid me for last month. Oh, sorry about that. I forgot. Just Works. Running a successful business is hard enough, and the thousands of little details can sometimes make it feel overwhelming. Plus, nobody really starts a business because they dream of doing HR or dealing with paperwork. Just Work helps you do the things you love in your business, and they'll take care of benefits, payroll, and HR. I like it. With Just Works, you're equipped to take care of your team. They'll process your payroll automatically. They'll set up team benefits online. You can even save on healthcare because you'll be part of a larger group. It's just that simple. Just Works, and geeks love Just Works because they've got software that helps you do all this, automate payroll and compliance as easy as can be. Grow your business, not your busy work. It takes you a couple of minutes to set this up. You literally, if you start right now, you'll be done in a minute or two. Just go to justworks.com. Use the offer code TWIG at checkout. You'll get 15% off your first year of services. Casper uses JustWorks, Imprint, Reboot, hundreds more. Startups love JustWorks. I want you to try it. Request a demo or sign up today. JustWorks.com. Make sure you mention Twig. And if you buy, use Twig as the offer code because that's going to save you 15% for the first year of your account. Visit JustWorks.com. Enter the offer code Twig. We thank them so much for the support of This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis, Kevin Marks. Facebook results are out. Breaking news.
Amazing numbers there. Amazing numbers.
One.
Kevin, have you seen it yet? You want to guess how many people?
Oh, yeah. Don't look. Don't show them.
I did just see it. I'm sorry.
Oh, shoot. Monthly active users. What do you think? 1.49 billion.
What? They couldn't do another 100,000?
Ah, so close to. How many people are on the internet? That's got to be everybody.
10 million. It's
phenomenal, isn't it?
10 billion on the internet? No, that's the planet.
No.
Another 10 million to get to 1.5.
10 million.
First 3 billion. First
His
3
math
billion,
is
then
not
3 billion coming.
But they're close. That's close. You know, that's 0.01 billion. That's all they need. 800 million people use WhatsApp.
That's amazing itself.
Yeah.
Wow, that one blows me away.
Remember when it was a big deal that Facebook had 500 million people? That wasn't so long ago. WhatsApp has 800 million. Messenger, Facebook Messenger, big success, 700 million. Of course, Facebook forced that. Instagram, you know, I thought they said 300 million last month, so it's still 300 million, so maybe not growing. 1.5 billion searches a day, 1 billion people getting online through internet.org.
Or offered.
Could get online.
Yeah. They're past, like homes passed.
What's Facebook groups? I didn't even know that existed. 850 million people do.
I don't know.
Leo doesn't.
No, it's just the labeled groups where you it's not quite pages. It's sort of somewhere in between the pages. Basically, it's a chat room that you can put together on Facebook.
Oh.
Yeah, like every one of our classes at school has a Facebook group.
Oh, I never heard of it.
Yeah. The one I forget about is Facebook
events.
You've
probably got one that you don't know about.
Yeah, probably do. 450 million people use events. That just shows you, you know, we're geeks and we kind of turn up our noses at things like this. But real people go, no, it's Facebook, everything. It does everything you need. 40 million small businesses are using Pages. I like Mark. In 1876, the year the first telephone call was made, there were 1.49 billion people on the earth. Now we've got that many people in Facebook. Where's the money part?
Okay, go to the other link that I put in the.
This is the up yours Twitter part where they go on about Mao's and then the money part.
Where's the second money part?
Earnings came in at 50 cents a share, 4.04 billion in revenue, beating the forecast by 3 cents a share.
Okay.
Nonetheless, stock fell in 5% in after hours, mainly because higher expenses. They say.
You know, it's really become the case that the stock market buys on the run-up to the quarterly results, and then whatever they are, sells. So
daily average daily users came in at 968 million.
Look at this one. This, to me, is the number that really matters. We mentioned 1.49 billion monthly active users. On mobile, 1.31 billion.
Yeah.
Facebook is mobile.
Plus, get this one. Engagement came in at 46 minutes per day on average.
Wow, that's more than
Facebook,
YouTube.
Instagram, Messenger.
Wow. That's a pretty linear graph, Kevin Marks. That's the kind of graph where you could pretty easily predict the future. It's almost a straight line growth.
Well, it's interesting because I remember them getting nervous as they were approaching the number of people online. Do you remember Mark giving that talk
about,
we just stop counting miles, we just start counting interactions or something? But I guess they carried on for it anyway.
Internet.org does matter so much to them strategically because they've got to get more people on the internet.
They've got a ceiling. Yeah. Well, how many people are online? What is that number?
I think, isn't it 3 billion now and next another 3 billion coming?
Okay.
Does that sound right?
A billion of them Chinese. Facebook daily active users in millions daily is well over 800 million daily. That's kind
expenses
of
came in at 2.77 billion, up 82% from the same period last year.
So that's what scared Wall Street, right?
That's
there.
What scared them a little bit. Yeah. But geez,
well, why are they up so much? That's a lot of money. 82% increase in expenses.
Must be some one-time stuff.
Acquisitions? No, I don't know. So Q2 growth, Twitter versus Facebook. Twitter gained 2 million users in the second quarter. Facebook, 50 million.
Mobile advertising, 76% of total ad revenue for the quarter.
Wow.
Nobody else can figure out. No one can figure out mobile advertising.
No one is doing that.
Media is killing us. 76%.
Did they break that down at all? Into what kinds of ads? Because they've got different kinds of ads. No. Okay. Because a lot of it was app installs at one point. But I'm not sure if that's still working for them.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that the hot thing for a while? Those app ads? And then it was over.
Well, I'm not sure it's over, but I suspect
they stopped. I didn't see. I don't see him anymore in my Facebook feed. You still see him?
No, I don't.
It went away.
I don't read my Facebook feed much. Let's have a look.
I decided to go into Facebook. I dove back in. I really dove back in and got serious about Facebook. And because I realized I've got three times as many followers on Facebook as I have on Twitter. And so I took it seriously, joined in, and I'm loving it. I gotta say, it's very good. A few things irritate. It's the same meme will come by. Right now, I cannot see the picture of that sad
that
lion.
Poor lion is
driving me nuts.
You know what though? That tells there. I think that's not a bad thing. That's what everybody's consumed with.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So as long as it's accurately reflecting what's on people's minds right now, I can live with that. What I don't like is seeing the video that was viral a year ago.
Yes, I agree. I agree. I talked to the head of the feed, and you know, you think there's some magic formula of why to do this, and he just said, yeah, we're working on that.
I feel that they've gotten better. I feel like they've gotten better.
They have gotten much better. I mean, remember the days when Scoble would take over your entire feed?
I must have unfollowed him because I don't see.
No, he's still there, but he's just not the same Scoble. But I was thinking about this afterwards. What I wish is when they do bring something back, make it obvious why you're doing that.
Yeah.
Because what they're doing, he said, we're doing it because there's some new activity, but then I've got to go digging for why is this here?
It's mysterious.
And they could say that we just got a sudden boost of comments or some new comments.
I see a lot of Jeff for some reason, because I must have given them a signal that I like your posts, because I see a lot of you. What do you got?
Is that an ad?
It says suggested
post.
That's an ad.
Is that suggesting that I post it? That's weird. Okay.
No, that's an ad.
And is that an app install ad? I mean, it's like, I wouldn't click this thing, but I don't know.
What is it for?
InVision.
I don't know.
Speed up your design process. Trusted by 1 million.
No, I don't think so. And I'm getting one for Happify, which I think is a website in my ad. Stop negative thoughts.
So I wonder how this compares with a media company or with Google. The ARPU, I love saying that. The ARPU.
What's that?
Average revenue per user.
Oh. How much is
$2.76.
Isn't that interesting? $2.76. Is that a year or quarter?
Oh, that's for the quarter.
That's for the quarter. So that means they're making, maybe $10 a year on you. That's a lot of money if you think about it, especially when you have 1.5 billion users.
That's make it up on volume, yeah.
$10 a year, though, is what they make on you.
Wow.
That's what you pay for that service.
The company spent $1.17 billion on R&D for the quarter.
R&D.
Up from only $4.92 million in the year-ago period.
That's what happened.
That's where it is. Well, it's just an investment.
They're trying to figure out how to do a better job.
And they're doing Oculus and they're doing other things. They're developing. They're investing. It's impressive. I mean, it's a hell. And, and I just read from people who talk about it and talk about what a well-managed company it is and how good it is to work there and that kind of stuff. So it's taken some of the mojo from old daddy Google.
I feel like, for a while, I was hating myself when I visited Facebook, and lately, I actually enjoy it.
I'm loving it.
What's Google's ARPU? How does that compare?
I don't know. Because it's going to be so different, though, Kevin, because you just don't have the same kind of... Google just has incredible volume of browsers.
Right. But,
to me is to compare the ARPU of... Oh, here we go. Okay, so this is in 2014.
Ooh, $45 a quarter.
What?
In 2014. So here's Google's massive ARPU.
Jesus.
We just said $10 a year for Facebook? Google's doing $45 a quarter. Now, this is old data. As you said, 2014.
This is quarter?
That's per quarter. Google doing okay. This was when Twitter...
And Facebook was then at 724.
Yeah.
And Twitter at...
3.5.
You said it was 2 now. Is this per year? That's annualized. Okay.
Q1.
So, oh, this is annualized. Okay.
So the 7 there is now 10 or 11 for Facebook.
Yeah. Well, not quite 10. Yeah.
So what's an ARPU for a Time Inc. or something?
You know, it's interesting because people complain about how Facebook intrudes and stuff. And but if you use Facebook as a service, how much would you pay a year if you wanted to? If you didn't want to have Facebook gather information on you or Google or anybody else, how much would you pay per year for what you get from them? And I think $10 would be cheap.
Oh. And $45 would be cheap for Google.
$4 a month. No, I can do $4. Yeah, anything less than $5 a month.
What you pay to Comcast for bits. No value added whatsoever.
Right. I was paying $5 a month for Post Haven.
So I see an article here from GigaOm, may it rest in peace, estimating 2010 New York Times ARPU of $170.
Wow.
But you have far.
But they have a lot fewer poos.
Yeah, the poos.
Yeah, and that's also is that user as in subscriber or user as in anyone who touched their website ever? Yeah. You know, the user becomes a bit weird in that case.
It costs $600 to subscribe to the New York Times for a year.
So they're saying only 4 times as many people look at it as pay for it, which seems unlikely.
I don't know. I can't.
Don't ask math questions. We're you can do that in your head. We have to think.
No, this is why ARPU is a kind of messy metric because it makes sense for it does make sense for Comcast because you've got a customer who's paying you regularly, but for something like Facebook or Google, it's a bit weirder.
But in some ways more important because it's a question of am I able to monetize that $1.49 billion? And so it's a pretty important question. I think Facebook's success in mobile. If I were the stock market, I'd be jumping for joy. I'm stunned. This is as far as I'm concerned, that's a buy opportunity.
Yeah.
Because
I might even do that myself.
That's impressive. That is really impressive. Okay. So there you go. Quarterly results in for Facebook.
Someone says in the chat room, we do, the company we do pay annually is Amazon. I pay them for Prime.
$100 a year. And that's just for second day shipping. Yep. And a few crappy music.
And I happily pay it.
Yeah, happily.
And some TV.
I like the TV actually. The Prime justifies itself, doesn't it? Yeah.
Well, except that it doesn't play on Android, which is a kind of pain in the bum. I can't watch Prime on my Android.
That drives me crazy. I can't Chromecast it.
Yeah. So I have to use the built-in app on the TV to watch it.
Yeah,
Prime. Yeah. Which is kind of annoying.
It's plus the apps are very different. Some TV apps allow you to buy stuff, some don't. It's very weird. It's unpredictable what you're going to get.
Yeah.
I'm sure you talked yesterday about stage fright, Justin. This is the very scary vulnerability on about 950 million Android devices that can be literally owned by an MMS message.
Well, the amount of ownage depends on the version, I think.
Okay.
Jason probably knows slightly more than this than me, but I think... around 4.2, they started scrambling memory, which made it much harder to actually take it over with a buffer overrun, but you can still crash it.
You can crash. Is that right?
That's exactly what Google had said, is that anything I think it's 4.4, has more checks in place. It's still possible, and stage fright at its core is system-level system-level stuff. So, you know, just using Hangouts is kind of like the delivery mechanism. That's just one example of
how reading, by the way, the MMS. You might only see that you received an MMS.
Right.
You may never even see it because the MMS could activate, take over your phone, and then delete itself.
Because these messaging apps, they auto-retrieve, which is an option that you can turn off, by the way. When they do that, they might process it for like a screenshot or something like that. You know, they actually do some churning on that file before you ever even watch it, just to kind of see what it is and pull some information.
What is the patch coming out?
But for an actual takeover, you'd have to craft it for the particular device, I think.
Yes, because it has to leap to an appropriate part of memory.
So you could probably crash any Android, but to actually take over the thing, you'll have to have a crafted packet for your particular...
We did a deep dive on this on Security Now, of course, if you want to know more. The big issue, really, is that there are many, many Android phones out there running old operating systems, which will never be updated.
So the challenge is, what can Google do to patch this?
Right.
They could, and if the phones are getting some kinds of updates, if they're getting the Google Cloud Services updates, or they're getting the app updates, they could patch the app, the sort of the mainline apps to deal with this. And hope that, that will propagate too. But this, it is, it's when something exploits something like that, it's really hard. Yeah.
There's so many apps.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that you, but there's an 80-20 thing here. It's like if the primary one is the MMS thing, then what you do is you patch the top ones of that.
And this is why there's been a process over the last couple of years of Google to move many of the Google services out of the system and into the Play Store.
Yeah.
So that they can update them through the Play Store.
It's an updating thing. Also, Google Play Services. The other thing they do is, and I forgot the name of it, but basically there's an API library you can use which lets you call newer OS hooks for certain kinds of things, and they patch it onto older OS versions. So that means that if I call some new notification thing that only exists in Ice Cream Sandwich and ARP, they will make that work on the, at least patch something through and not crash on the older version, right. So you can call it. So
here's the here's
those
I guess
libraries are deployed through.
Here's the workaround. I don't think it's such a bad workaround. If you go into Hangouts, you go into the SMS settings and go down to Advanced, you can turn off automatically retrieve MMS messages. That'd do it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever your SMS or whatever your app of choice is.
Hangouts. I'm in Hangouts, right? But MMS is the issue, so turn that off.
Right.
Assuming this will hit WhatsApp as well.
If WhatsApp uses the rendering engine, I don't know if it does or not. Does it do its own?
It can't not do it. I mean,
it's part of the...
Yeah, stage fright is at the core.
Stage fright is the core library. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's got system-level access, because basically it's got to write to chips.
Everybody uses it. Although it wouldn't be a hard thing to do if you're WhatsApp to stop doing that. Would you not be able to render at all if you turned that off?
But they've still got to deploy updates to 800 million people.
Right.
If they've got the same issue.
Non-trivial. By the way, this has not been seen in the wild, despite the fact that... And there's no proof of concept code, because that's being saved for Black Hat or DEF CON. So there's nothing to freak out about. But what it underscores is the difficulty Google is in with Android being out there on so many devices, so many old devices, and really no mechanism for fixing it. Fixing those devices.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because you want to place blame somewhere. In this case, the blame lies partially in Google for creating a system, an open environment that can be, I hate to use the word splintered, but can be divided up in so many different directions that it makes it difficult.
Right.
And then you can also blame the carriers and the other, entities that kind of get in the way of updating or decide, that's 18 months old. I'm not going to update that. So anyone using a year and a half old phone, which is not super duper old, is just kind of screwed.
Right.
It has to have a device that could be affected by this.
Right.
Google is about to buy a fake hamburger company.
Well, it tried to.
It didn't get them. They said, no, we're worth more than $200 to $300 million. What? It's made from plants.
Here's the thing. I don't like the veggie burgers that try to act like meat.
No.
I like the ones that admit they're vegetables.
What if it succeeded? What if it tasted just like
that
a
would
real
be good
meat?
For the earth, I think.
It'd be very good for the earth.
And for cows.
Yeah.
Never mind the... The cows on the billboards.
Is this like the mayonnaise one? Where they make mayonnaise out of peas and I don't know. That's actually taking
over. But remember, didn't Sergey put money into this guy who was making fake muscle material?
Not fake. That was clone. That was like lab-grown muscle.
It was real muscle, but it was cloned. Okay. This is not the Cultured Beef Project. This is a company called Impossible Foods. They make the Impossible Cheeseburger, which looked like a cheeseburger. I don't know if it tastes like a cheeseburger. Anybody try one of these? And why is it? Why? How? Google says you're worth $200 to $300 million. They say no, we want more. I agree with you, Jeff. I've had many a veggie burger. They fail to satisfy.
Yeah, Wendy's is supposed to have one coming out that's like a black bean burger. I love a black bean
burger. Black bean's okay. Yeah, no, that's
little mushy, but I love them.
I feel like this is imminent. Like, this is part of the whole global climate crisis. This is something we've got to solve. Eating meat is so inefficient.
It is.
And yet, you're not going to get me away from that steak. No way, no how. So we've got to solve this. So
if you go to a company like Germany, as you were just in, the idea of them going out without meat.
Oh, my God. I've never seen a country eat more sausages.
Yes. I love them. Love my
food. Oh, I do. But I just can feel my heart congealing every time I...
There's probably not much trans fats in their sausages. You're probably okay.
Really? Sausages are okay?
That's a Brit talking. Come on.
Brit sausages have lots of healthy plant material.
One thing you can say for sausages, it does at least use the whole cow or pig.
Well, this week in diets, but the whole saturated fat is bad for you thing is gradually being undermined. And what they've realized is that what was really bad for you is trans fats. And so when they try to substitute saturated fat with trans fat, that's when it got
bad. Isn't that funny? We were killing people with margarine.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So the sort of German-style and Italian-style sausages, which are basically tubes of pork fat, are nowhere near as bad for you as American-style sausages.
Well, good, because they're damn delicious. I would eat tubes of pork fat all day if I could. So, yeah. Dr. Mom, it's okay if I eat salami?
Salami is supposed to be pretty good. It depends
if
what you're
eating. You're kidding me.
Read your.
That's what I was cutting out of my diet.
And pepperoni.
I love salami.
The other thing about salami and pepperoni is that you eat 10 grams of them at a time. You do not eat
that's me.
The whole salami.
Maybe not.
You cut little bits off it. And so that's the other reason it's good for you. Whereas if you're eating breakfast sausages, you do eat like half a pound of them. So there's a big difference in the amount of intake you take.
One of my favorite places in the world is the food hall at Kaufhaus des Westens, KDW, in Berlin. It is palatial, and the sausage area, there's just no end of sausages to pick from. You can smell the smokiness of them. The Debreciner is my favorite. Oh, God. And just a little bit of mustard on the thing, and you dip it in the mustard and eat it with a little Brötchen.
We went to the oldest Wurst grill in, was it Nuremberg? I can't remember.
Nuremberg would be probably a little Nuremberg Wurst.
Yeah. And those Nuremberg sausage. There's a battle over whether Nuremberg, or maybe this was in Passau, but man, they were so, I have a picture. I'm going to make you all hungry. But they put it on a sauerkraut. So maybe that will turn some people off. I don't know. It was so good.
But also the hotel breakfasts in Germany are like, here's a giant plate of sausages. Make yourself a sandwich.
So you're saying, though, that I shouldn't stay away from the carbs. That's just eat the meat.
There are diets that say that. Basically, the broad advice that I've got from this is that the dietary pyramid has been misdesigned for about 40 years, and it has too much carbs in it. And so you want to adjust the balance of carb, fat, and protein. And the problem is that most of the time you diet, you cut the fat, you increase the protein a bit, and you end up eating more carbs as a ratio. So you want to look at the ratio between the three. That's the stuff that I got from the dietary stuff.
Somebody in the chat room lives in Germany, says, we don't eat a lot of sausages. We eat doner. It's true. There is a Turkish there's a Turkish doner shop on every corner in Germany.
That is also true, yes.
So I'll agree with you on that, and I do love doner. This was the sausage. They look like those little Nuremberg sausages. I can't remember where it was. Wurstkugel. And the beer was good. But you know what the best part of that was? The mustard. I'd never had such good mustard.
The mustard is the greatest. It's just to die for. Well, in fact, it is to die for.
It's the beer you should stay away from, though, right? That's the one with the carbs in it.
There you go.
You can't win.
Yes. You already got the little Stein. You didn't get the mass one.
No. She actually warned me. The waitress said, no, you don't want that. They knew ahead of time. All right. Enough with this week in Wurst, although that would be a fun show.
Oh, yes.
My son actually is already bidding for that show. He wants to do a show on cured meats.
I always wanted to open a restaurant that was nothing but stuffed meat things.
Google is getting stuffed meats. What's a stuffed meat?
Well, I mean meat stuffed into things. Dumplings, rogies. Yeah. Oh,
stop it.
No. All that stuff.
Google Street View is now mapping pollution.
Doesn't that make sense? They have cars going everywhere. They can put sensors in the cars.
Yeah, it makes sense. It almost makes me wonder. Electric cars now. So.
What if Google did a deal with UPS or the Postal Service to put sensors on all their vehicles?
Yeah.
What could they learn?
This is big data. Let's have everything collecting data all the time. The initial trial was in Denver. Three cars with air quality sensors drove around for 750 hours. It was
adding
part of
pollution all the time.
Yeah, I know. Let's do electric cars. If you can.
These electric cars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're doing this in conjunction with Acclima.
What if you have pollution sensors on all the buses? Oh, wait. They're diesel buses.
Right. All right. And then as long as we're getting a smarter Google, Google search can now tell you if a store is crowded. What?
How do they know that? Because of maps?
Because they know where you are, and they can.
Do they know where everybody else is too?
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's basically stuff they've already done with traffic, right? If you look at the traffic stuff, they tell you where people are in cars based on where their phones are.
So you can know that the best time to go would be like 5 o'clock or whatever.
But Foursquare's done this for ages.
Oh, really?
I asked Dennis, and Dennis said, "Yeah, we've been doing this forever. If you look at the venues."
They know when it's busy. Foursquare only has Foursquare data.
Yes, Foursquare has. Yeah, Google has more data. So Foursquare has Foursquare and Swarm data, which is fewer people than Google has. But they do now have ambient data as well as check-in data.
Business hours and popular hours have been on the Foursquare web and mobile venue pages forever, according to Dennis Crowley. Yeah.
And if you actually sign up, if you claim your venue on Foursquare, part of what they give you is. Here's the traffic from people and people.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd like that.
It's a very handy thing as a business owner. You can see where they when people are coming and what people are saying about you as well and so on. So
yeah.
Well, obviously people are saying what you can see directly, but the traffic stuff is interesting.
Okay, Google's gotten more powerful. You can now use Okay Google to send messages via WhatsApp, WeChat, Next Plus, Telegram, and Viber. How do you do that, Jason? You say, okay, Google, send a message via Viber?
Yeah, send a WhatsApp message to blank, and then answer message here.
Nice.
Okay.
That presumably means, is that unilateral on Google's part, or does WhatsApp have to cooperate?
The developers have to cooperate by building in the appropriate code. But
every Android app should allow.
So is there an intent for that? It's just a send message intent?
That
it must be an intent. Google's been doing this over the last couple of months, kind of opening up the voice actions a little bit here and there to different apps. So
70 apps now. Breaking news, Zipcar, Spotify, TuneIn, YouTube, all recipes, Runkeeper, job. And these will all show up in Google Now as well. That's nice. Love that. App integration makes it even more useful. Let's take a break. Come back with more. Jeff Jarvis, Kevin Marks, Leo Laporte. We're talking the Google. Running a little late today, so we'll get through these next.
It's Clippy's fault.
I installed Windows 10 and I could not end Windows Weekly until I completed it, which meant it was like a long show.
You know, I was trying to fix my microphone problem on my machine. I decided to rebuild it. Took about 38 seconds.
Stop it! Shut up! You got Google Chromebook there. That is one nice thing about Chromebook. Although, Apple still doesn't do this. Apparently, they're going to. But right now, Windows, when you log into your Windows account, and you kind of have to if you're going to use Windows, it knows all your stuff. I got my desktop wallpaper. I got Facebook connected. All the things that were connected just stayed connected, which is kind of nice. I might be using more of Windows 10. I have to say, I'm impressed.
Apple does that, too. But you've got to tell it where it's getting it from, right?
Oh, yeah. You can go through your account. Add accounts.
And if the account's
Chrome
backed
does
up
it
the thing,
brilliantly.
Yeah, Chrome is just
so easy on a Chromebook. But the Chromebook stores nothing anyway, so it's just
Yeah, but also Android. When I got Rosie the Nexus 7, when I booted it up, it says and logged in as her. It said, "Do you want to get everything off your phone?" So it was able to get all the stuff off a Samsung phone and install all the apps from that and get most of it there without having to do much fiddling with it afterwards. Which is how I found that three of the apps didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like that. That's one thing I do, and I'm sure Jason, you do every few weeks, is set up a new phone, and it's really nice. It's become easier and easier and easier.
It has become easier.
Sure. I sometimes do it just for fun.
You would.
I'm going to watch Game of Thrones tonight. Let me wipe my phone and start over. I just feel like sometimes like the S6. I keep doing that to the Galaxy S6 because that thing has so many problems. And I just keep wiping and starting over. And it's good for a while, and then it starts getting messed up again. I think it's something to do. They're using this Exynos processor, but there's actually, two dual-core processors. And they default to the slow one unless you need more power, and then they kick into the fast one. And I think the handoff isn't very good, and you can feel the phone get really hot as the... And the battery, you can almost watch it go down as it switches to the fast processor. But I think the back and forth handoff isn't done well. That's my guess. I don't know. Samsung is in deep doo-doo, I'll be honest with you. I feel like they're just... I don't know who's going to take over. But, they're just... Maybe Motorola. Motorola's doing the right thing. They're making it a pure phone. Our show today brought to you, my friends, by PagerDuty. Are you on PagerDuty? I think nobody carries a pager anymore, but all of us have had the experience of being on call. Maybe not all of us. If you haven't, you are lucky. Being on call is tough. PagerDuty makes it better. Don't hate the pager. Hate the game. If you're on call, you will love PagerDuty. Get the boss to take a look at this. It decreases alerting noise. For IT operations, for developers, make sure that the right person is notified at the right time. It's nice because it integrates with everything you use. We use New Relic. It integrates with that. Nagios, Keynote, AppDynamics. You even have, there's over 100 ready-to-use integrations, but you even have the capability of rolling your own. They've got very nice APIs with PagerDuty. When an incident occurs, PagerDuty actually looks at the on-call schedule. And then it looks at your personalized alerting preferences so the right team member is notified in the right way. And if that person doesn't respond, PagerDuty will automatically escalate issues to another team member until it is responded to. It's smart. You could dispatch alerts. I guess you could probably still use a pager, but also automated phone calls, SMS, email, push notifications, which means you can be on call, but be there if you're needed. Decrease the noise, too, because incidents are automatically filtered and deduped, so only actionable alerts are delivered. Great analytics tools means you can proactively make system improvements to prevent future issues. That's nice, too. And, boy, is it relentless when it comes to reliability. You can depend on PagerDuty, fully distributed across multiple data centers, multiple hosting providers, multiple contact method providers per method. Yeah, PagerDuty is robust, reliable, and very smart. You can fully customize it to fit you and your team, regardless of size or location. That's why Microsoft uses them, GitHub uses them, Boeing, Nike, Pinterest, Box. You'll see the list at pagerduty.com/twit. Sign up for a free 2-week trial or just sign up. For as little as $19 a month, increase your uptime with PagerDuty, pagerduty.com/twit. And if you want that, don't hate the pager, hate the game. Sign up at pagerduty.com for a new account and you'll get the t-shirt for free. It's a great t-shirt. When you go to the PagerDuty site to watch the videos, they have some very great, it's the kind of company you'd like. It's great. pagerduty.com/twit. Google Translate now translates printed text in 27 languages. I had it all set up. I had the sign reader set up when I went to Germany and Austria and Hungary. I had the talk thing. Have you ever used the talk thing?
Oh, yeah, I have.
So it's like you've got a simultaneous translator in your phone. You speak, and then it says it in German,
Of course, you didn't have to use it in German because everybody in Germany speaks English.
Better English than I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But useful in Sweden.
Same thing in Scandinavia. You know what?
In Scandinavia, yeah.
What I realize now is everybody around the world has a better educational system than we do.
Yeah.
We used to have the best education. Higher education is free in Germany.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. if you want to get a higher education, you can. It's free. And you see it. You see the results because that is a well-run country.
Well, the language thing is fascinating as well because you know, something we've been talking about with IndieWeb is how do I mark up my page when it's in different languages?
Right.
And you know, most of us are imperfectly multilingual. We speak one language well and some other languages a bit. And some people are very, very fluent in multiple languages. But Google has baked into it this weird assumption that every web page is in a single language. And if you actually go to their webmaster advice, it says make different pages in different languages. And then they don't respect the markup you put in the page to say what language it's in. They run it through their guess what language this is program. And then they'll say this page is in Japanese. Do you want to translate it?
Right.
Which means if you've got a page that is generally in a mixture of languages, it will fail on you because it says this page in Japanese, it'll only translate the Japanese bits.
Yeah.
But also, it doesn't take into account the fact that most people in the world do understand multiple languages to different degrees. It has this sort of very monoculture, monolingual approach that is very, you know, very American to some extent. I mean, English too. Making everyone in the world speak English was part of the British Empire's great plan.
Thank you very much. It made life very easy for me in school. If you go to the first link under my numbers, I'm not going to use it anyway, don't worry. It's the new Google News Lab has a a way to see what languages are used for queries on search in what cities.
Oh, how interesting.
So it is. Which kind of interesting.
This is Shanghai. Number one search in Shanghai by a long shot is English.
Well, this is also that's what language they use based on Google guessing.
Oh, that's 2004. But let's zip ahead. It's interesting. It got bigger for a little while in 2008, 2009. Now in 2015, actually, English is
still here. Shanghai is kind of a weird one because like most people in China aren't using Google.
English, Japanese, German, French.
Yeah, the only people using Google in Shanghai will be tourists because you can't get to Google from...
So if you go up to the cities link above...
Let's use a different city. What would be good? Berlin, New York?
Yeah, Berlin.
Paris is going to be all French.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. A lot of German searches. Wasn't that way in the early days of the web. No, it was kind of...
Oh, I tell you what you should try.
Yeah.
Geneva.
What language do they speak in Geneva?
They have a few.
Okay. They don't have Geneva.
Okay. Well, try London.
I'm just curious. Paris has got to be like 100% French, right? They don't even bother telling you. They can't. It's like, I can't be bothered. I'm busy. Where should I try? Delhi?
That'd be interesting.
I was trying to try London because London's a very polyglot city.
I think I broke it.
I think you broke it. Yeah, it's not rendering. The JavaScript graphs aren't loading.
I broke. You don't like JavaScript too much?
That's another rant. But I'm going to stick my language rant for now.
I have London.
The other thing that Google does.
Look at London. English is like not even, there's no second best.
Oh, there we go. Oh. There's something.
Well, it changes over time. See, in the early days of the web, you didn't have much choice, right? You had to use English.
2011, English shrunk, Spanish grew. Yeah. And then, English. Yeah, okay.
That's a weird
Should we just right? mandate that English is the international language and just leave it at that?
Well, there's this weird thing that Google used to do. Still does to some extent. It's when you travel, it switches you to the local
yeah,
site.
Yeah, no, it did that to me. I was in Germany. Yeah,
and he says, you're in Germany. You obviously want Google.de.
Google.de,
It's like, no. And part of that is that they assume that everyone's browser is set to English by default, so they'll try and give you a more sensible local default.
So they don't pay attention to the regionalization.
But they do pay attention to the regionalization, except when it's set to English. So if you set it to German, I think you'll get German in America, but setting it to English, you're out of luck. But... You know, there is a lot of silliness around this. So there is the assumption, you know, because they have, especially when you're logged in, they know who I am. They know what languages I search in. You know, I've got a pref on my phone, yet somehow they decide that, oh, no, we'll give you a German UI for this. The even funnier one is Switzerland, where I'm not sure this is still true, but it used to be true that if you go to Switzerland and go to Amazon, They give you German. Even if you're in the French-speaking bit of Switzerland or the Italian-speaking bit of Switzerland, they decided that German was the language you have to speak if you're using Amazon in Switzerland.
Well, that's a mistake, right?
Which, you know, it's this sort of strange... It's this sort of nice simplifying assumption that you make if you're an engineer and you're not thinking very hard.
Talk about chauvinism.
Country equals language, which right. is not even true for America. You know, there are,
right.
you know, something like something where between 20% and 30% of Americans speak another language a lot of the time in the home, and many more than that actually are able to speak them. So it is this sort of strange monoglot assumption, which is based on the fact that's the people who are, you know, executives of their company, and so that hasn't been challenged strongly up to now. There is still this assumption that you're speaking one language, which is strange, because, you know, this is, as the companies grow, this needs to change. But there's still this assumption that each web page is in a single language, and that's how things should be.
What is the social web acid test?
The social web acid test. I'm glad you asked.
SWAT!
Play the video. The video is only like a minute and a half long, so play this. You need sound. Because it's got music.
This is a demo.
Ben takes a photo of me.
Ben Ward Miller takes a photo of Aaron Pericke. Oh, Ben Roberts, I'm sorry.
So this is the way he does tags. And what's supposed to happen is that I get a notification that I was tagged in a photo.
Even from a different website, not from Facebook, just from a website.
Yeah. Is what happened on my phone. So
wow.
I got that notification. And step three is somebody sees that photo in their reader. This is already one of the remote participants.
Yeah.
And whoever sees that is going to post a reply.
I like the music.
In that reader. So I really want to push my luck here. Is anybody confirmed they're going to send a comment on IRC?
Look at all the comments.
There we go.
And is that using IndiePub? I mean, SubPub.
I'll explain the bits of it in a sec. So he's got notifications.
Yeah.
On his phone.
So now if I go back to the computer.
Or you could just use Facebook.
Refresh. There they are.
Hey.
Sweet.
So what reader were they using?
They had signed into Woodwind. This is what they saw in their reader with this post. And that is a fully functioning demo of SWAT Zero across three different...
The social web acid test.
Three different locations. Yeah.
So, Kevin, explain it all. A victory for Indie Webcam.
So the music was actually composed by Aaron as well, which is kind of fun.
It's called An Ordinary Day.
He composed it for a different film project, but then he decided it fit really well. So the point of this is something that was defined in 2010, at the point where we were talking about federated social networks, which is back in the open social days when we were all trying to make these things work together, before Facebook was the hegemon it is now. And the test is explained as that series of steps. Ben takes a photograph. He tags Aaron. Aaron gets notified. Other people see the thing in the stream, comment on it, and then both Ben and Aaron get notified that has happened. So it's this flow that happens very naturally on Facebook, because Facebook is a single system and does that. And the challenge is, how do you make this work across multiple different systems? And so that's what's going on there is there's a set of different protocols we're using in IndieWeb to do that. So there's micropub to post to the sites. There's web mention, which is how I say I've done something to you on my site. I've tagged you with that. So in the first case, Ben posts a photograph. He tags it to say it's a photograph of Aaron. So he puts a person tag on it that says AaronPerecki.com. And then he sends a web mention to Aaron's website. So then Aaron has a process running that detects he's had that web mention and sends a notification to his phone so he can go and look at it. The commenting bit, that's done with another site. There's an IndieWeb reader now. There's a couple of them. But the one that we used in that demo is Kyle's reader, which is reader.kylewm.com. And you log into that with your indie website, and then you subscribe to feeds, and then it gives you a feed reading experience, and it gives you a little comment, retweet, like bot box at the bottom, which uses MicroPub to post the comments and the retweets and the likes. And they will go back to the person whose post you've given them on, which was the third stage of that, where Aaron got the notification. Well, Aaron got the notification. Ben got the notification because it was his post. And then Aaron got a notification because Ben put that comment on his post, saying that these people had commented, and then resent the notification to Aaron that the post had changed, so he could detect that change and show it. So it's like the Penn and Teller thing where they do the three balls trick, and you go, "That was clever." And then they show you how they did it, and then you go, "Wow, that was really complicated." And it's a bit like that with this. The point is that if you're doing it in a single system, this is just a bunch of database queries that happens within the system, and you can build that thing, and it's a known thing. So if you're building something like Twitter or Facebook in a single system, doing this stuff, it's work. I'm not saying it's not work, and getting the user interface right is hard, but it's something that's straightforward to build. Doing it in such a way that works between sites is a different kind of work, because you've got to agree what the protocols are for all these different pieces. You've got to work out what different kinds of notifications there are and write things to handle that. And so this has been a test that was set up as a thing to pass in the same way that ACID tests were set up for browsers to interoperate to pass 5 years ago. And at Indie Web Camp, I think it was 2 weeks ago, the Indie Web Camp in Portland, we finally got all the pieces together. And I was just saying in one place, but actually it was also distributed. Ben was posting from New York. Kyle, who responded, was in San Francisco. And Aaron was in Portland. And I think Amy responded as well when she was in the UK, in Brighton. So there was this whole, like, it wasn't just a demonstration. The point is that we've now got these protocols and we're using this stuff all the time. So we've now got the building blocks that we can put together to build these kinds of systems across multiple different sites. So I think that's, I'm excited by it because it's a demonstration, but it's also showing people that the kind of things they do every day in Facebook can be done elsewhere. So we just got to work on the 1.5 billion users thing.
Cool. For some reason, I feel like we've all given up on the federated web, but...
Well, you're using it.
I love it, but I just feel like most people are just going to say, well, why not just use Facebook? it's sad to me, and I think you're fighting the good fight, but sometimes I feel like maybe you're Don Quixote tilting at windmills. Maybe it's...
Well, the thing is that, you know, at the point when they wrote this test, you'd have said, why not just use MySpace?
In 2010, yeah.
In 2010. Yeah. So the assumption that the silos are permanent is a mistake.
No, we shouldn't. I agree. Yeah. We should fight.
So making sure that, you know, the biggest... I talk about like fragility debt. So the you've got the idea of technical debt where you build something and you sweep the bugs under the carpet until it blows up in your face. The fragility debt is the same thing, where you rely on a particular system for a long time and you gradually move everything into that, and then suddenly it changes and the world has been pulled out from under you. And that is a problem that we have. We've seen that in tech many times, whether it's a system version obsoleting an app, whether it's, you know, the one that hurt me was Apple discontinuing iDisk and suddenly a whole bunch of data I had went away and my website went down and so on. So it is this thing where you can rely on these systems. I'm not saying don't use Facebook. You know, IndieWeb doesn't say that at all. What it says is use your own site and share copies out to Facebook and or to Twitter and make sure that you can read stuff back. So that if those systems delete your account or go down or get acquired and change their idea of what they're doing, you haven't lost everything. So it's a defense in depth thing. It's the sense of having only your own web presence is important. It's not important to everyone in the same way it's important to those of us who publish on the web all the time. But having that option is good, and being able to store your things in a way that isn't completely reliant on one company continuing in the direction they're continuing is important.
Jeff Jarvis, you were at VidCon.
I was.
How was that?
It was cool. I wish I'd gone before. 23,000.
This is your first time?
At VidCon.
Wow.
Of course, 99.9% of them are teenage girls, which is odd.
I have to say, and you know, I know I'm the old radio, old media guy who's mocking YouTube and the YouTube fan base, and hey, it'll never fly. And one piece of evidence that people like me use is all those teen girls in the front row. But on the other hand, the Beatles, teen girls kind of like the Beatles, yeah, and they seem to have, yeah, some legs.
I mean, it's so Howard Stern, as you may know, makes fun of podcasts and the internet. And
you
I
were on Stern. Things.
So I called Stern, I think it was on Monday.
Yeah, people were telling me, hey, Jarvis mentioned you guys.
I plugged Twit because I said, listen, these are real businesses. And
what did
and,
he say to that?
No, they're not a size. Well, he because what he does,
I would
is,
know,
he
but he's on satellite radio, and I've never been able to listen.
He does that? You know, watch it. He does an old fart thing where he says, you know, podcasting is BS, and if you really want to work in radio, you have to get a job in broadcast, and you have to get an audience there, and you have to prove yourself and learn your ropes like I did. And I called in and I said, Howard, you're the one who killed radio broadcast. You killed it. You're the man who killed it. And for you to expect people to do what you did after you've already killed it and pulled the ladder up behind you, that's gone. And I said, plus this stuff is really big. And I said, I went to VidCon. They all started laughing. You know, what costume did you wear? I said, it's not Comic-Con, it's VidCon.
Yeah.
And I said, these things are big. You know, like who? So I mentioned PewDiePie. And all week he's been constantly pushing me on PewDiePie. He's been mentioning PewDiePie. The joke was PewDiePie just bought Howard Stern.
Right.
But he's, you know, they don't make how much money.
PewDiePie makes $7 million a year.
$7.85 million a year. And how many followers does he have? 38 million people follow him. And you know, granted,
I should point out that at his peak in radio, Howard had about 20 million.
And Sirius is approaching 30 million total subscribers. Granted, those people pay every month.
Right.
You know, not at all comparable, but pretty amazing. And I mentioned you, and I mentioned young, you know, Jake Uger, who I interviewed on stage about the Young Turks. And you both have fairly similar businesses in size and scale, and they're good businesses. And there's a future here. And so I also yell at Howard saying, why the heck do you want to be a wage slave? If he and I, long before Jason Calacanis ever said this just recently online. Way,
very nice post by Jason in which he said Howard should just do on demand on Spotify.
Yeah, I've been arguing I think I revealed this when his contract last time was to be renewed. His people contacted me and I introduced his people to the top echelon at Google. And nothing came of it.
Yeah.
But imagine Stern on YouTube. Imagine Stern. I said, why are you sharing? He said, I get a paycheck. I said, yeah, but you're sharing the value and the revenue with Sirius. You should have your own empire. You should own your own thing. People
it's
like
really
me would pay.
It's really
for
true.
You.
If Howard did an app, I would think he'd make more money because I would listen to Howard Stern, but I can't because I don't have Sirius.
He would keep more money. Yeah, I pay $12 a month or whatever it is now. It's probably $15 a month for all I know, on three autos, all kinds of things, plus for the online to Sirius for one reason, Howard Stern.
Yeah, see, I'm not that devoted. But if there were a Howard Stern app, I might listen.
Though the thing is, so I imagine if Stern did leave, his contract is about up. If he did leave, would I keep Sirius? A year or 2 years ago, I would have said, yeah, because I haven't listened to broadcast. I said to him, by the way, and he said, well, broadcast is still big. I said, crap, and it's crap. And he said, well, yeah, it is. And it's not that big, no. The thing is, a couple of years ago, I would have
probably kept... broadcast is still getting into broadcasting.
Say again?
Well,
yeah, but as a last-ditch effort to save a dying business.
Well,
says the broadcaster got into podcasting.
I heard from...
Hey, I'm a perfect example.
A public radio executive... have listened to me on Stern. I love it when NPR people love Stern too. Ira Glass loves Stern. An executive from elsewhere in public radio and said that he gives millions of dollars a year in fees to podcasters, and now he's at the point of putting podcasters on the air just to make the air cool.
Interesting.
And
that's
so,
the flip that you want to see at VidCon. That's the flip. That's when these guys become bigger than broadcast. And I got to tell you, it's going to happen any minute now. Because
have you seen
just
the stuff about them touring? That was weird.
But just look at kids are. Yeah. First of all, anybody under 18 is not watching TV at all.
Well, my daughter took me through all the things she watches. It was amazing. There was one with big red lips, and she interviewed Jerry Seinfeld. I can't remember her name. So there was a great moment when Katie Couric interviewed Zay Frank on stage. And so Zay just looked at her at one point and said, what happened with the world? Zay's there running.
He's an old timer now, too.
Yeah. And he's running motion pictures for BuzzFeed. And he's trying to like Vice. He's trying to create shows on broadcast. And Katie is on the Internet. And he said, what happened here? They cross streams, so to speak. And so, yeah, VidCon also. But here's what got me, Leo. My epiphany from VidCon was this. It wasn't my epiphany. It was from the stage. It was from the Green Brothers and others on stage. And I think Zabe Frank, too. It's not as if what they said was when you share video of this sort of YouTube, you're not saying to somebody, this is very good content. You should watch this content because I recommend it. What you're doing is social signaling to say, this says something about me and my relationship and what I think of you by sending this to you. And the content is a social tool. And Jake Uger realizes that. You realize that. Broadcast will never realize that, just as newspapers can't realize it. And it makes you think differently about what video is and why it's there. It's a social token.
Yeah.
That sure ended the conversation.
No, it's a thing that you use as a shared currency of experience. It's you say, I saw this thing, did you see this thing? Which is, you know, you used to be network television was the way you did that. And now it's the internet and it's memes and it's things like that. But it's also all these other channels and things that we have no idea existed. The one that got me was the Digitor stuff. You know about that?
Mm-mm.
So Digitor is there's a good article which I'm trying
That's
to find.
DEC, but you're talking about Digital Equipment Corp. I remember that.
No. Digitor, Digitor. Basically, this is a company that set up the idea of taking these online video people around to do live shows, which they sell tickets to, and they also sell a Meet the Star experience for $200 or something, which is basically you line up and get to take a selfie with the star of this video show. Yeah. And they're coining it. And they're not selling out stadiums, but they're doing lots of tours around lots of towns and lots of parents are bringing their teenagers to the shows to see this. And the shows don't even make any sense. It's just the point is that you have...
You know what this reminds me a lot of? In the early days of rock and roll, entrepreneurs would put together these kinds of tours where each band would play three songs and it'd be screaming girls. In the early days of rock, this is what was going on. Exactly this. And it wasn't huge audiences, but it was the beginning of something. I don't know if this is it, but I do feel like
there's something's
happening.
I watched, you know, one of the grandmothers of this world is I Justine. And,
yeah,
you know,
she's 31 and a grandma. Around,
I know. She's been around since I adore you. I'm just joking. But it was wonderful. I just sat in one of her sessions from the Entertainment Weekly stage, by the way, at VidCon. And just watched her interacting with her people.
Isn't she brilliant?
And she is amazing.
Yeah.
Yes.
She's just so warm and so enthusiastic. And the combination of the girls who adore her and the boys who have terrible crushes on her, obviously. And she's been doing this for years. And she turned into a book and she tours around and she's doing, you know, the signups. The thing at VidCon is that, you know, there's three layers of VidCon. There's the community level, which is the fan, which is the 23,000 girls. There's the creator level. And then there's the industry level. The industry level is old white men like me all trying to divvy up the money of the two floors below. News layer, I mean, the creator layer was fascinating. I went to a news panel with people on there who, you know, it was one snippy journalist I saw said, well, a journalist with a lowercase j. But these people are reinventing news. And then on the lowest level, you sign up at a lottery, as I understand it, and you give your top choices for the YouTube stars you want to see, and then you win and you get a wristband, and the wristband cannot be mangled in any way. If you want to give it to a friend, if you want to trade with a friend, the friend has to be with you at the moment they're put on, and once they're on, that's the star you're seeing and nobody else. And then they go and they line up, as Kevin just said, just to have the selfies.
Yeah. This is just all about teenage girls, though.
So I just put the link in the chat, no. But this is there's a great article on BuzzFeed by Ellen Cushing about this, where she went on the road with this Digitor thing around different places with this crowd. And it is, it's fascinating read to me because it is, this thing makes, so this, that, you know, they sold 120,000 tickets for this thing. And it is a bunch of teenagers in a van going on stage and saying hi to people. They're not really,
you know,
there's no performance. There's no performance, really.
There's a little bit of performance, but the performance is at a school talent show level.
Yeah,
it's also like a K-Rock. It's like a radio van going around, and you can watch the jocks talk on the microphone.
It's a showcase. It's not. Yeah,
yeah, that's all it is.
But it's a sign that something's happening. It's not the end of the line by any means. I'm the wrong guy to ask because I think Howard, frankly, I know with all due respect, Jeff, I know you love Howard, but it's like saying, hey, Ed Sullivan, I think there's something going on here. But he's got his thing and he's done and he's made plenty of money. He doesn't need to do it.
He's 61 years old.
Yeah.
But as
am I. So it's not, we're the wrong ones to talk to.
But there's one more big innovation left in him. There's one.
Is there really?
The reason I push him. Yeah, and the reason I push him is one big star like Howard could prove the business efficacy of the internet.
Yeah.
And as entertainment. And I think that, you know, the satellite was nowhere. They had, you know, a couple hundred thousand subscribers. He came on, they're approaching 30 million. He built that. It really was Howard who did that. And then the same thing can happen, I think, if it's Howard, it's Oprah, it's, you know, name who it is, a big name star who says, screw it, I'm going to go on the internet, I'm going to own it all. I mean, the one person who's come the closest is Louis C.K., I would say.
Yeah, I think that's sort of irrelevant. Because whether Howard Stern gets involved or not, it's going to happen. This, by the way, this stuff is all hormonal, this VidCon stuff. Oh, yes. It's just hormones. And as is most teen culture,
as was Beatles,
so was the Beatles. Yeah. So, yeah. But I do think that you're really close to the transition right now, and I'm sure network television executives are well aware of this. Where people just aren't going to watch TV; they're going to watch YouTube. They're going to watch, you know, 6-second Vine videos. They're going to, and what's interesting to me mostly about these guys is they're learning how to create for a new medium. No one ever told me that you someday 6-second videos would be the platform. If I would have said, well, good luck with that. The Vine stars, as we've talked about before, are genuine stars. There's no question about it. Right. I would hate if when you tell me, oh, YouTube, you should build your business on YouTube. I would say to you, yeah, until Google decides to cut ad revenues in half or whatever.
Well, right, but that's just the IndieWeb argument again. It's like you want take advantage of the platforms that exist and put your stuff on there, but use them as a stepping stone to build a broader brand. You know, which iJustine is a great example of that. You know, she was bootstrapped herself on Justin.tv. She was the Justine of that replaced Justin. But has gradually moved herself across a bunch of different platforms because she is, you know, she is good at this. She's a consummate performer and a very nice person who does relate to people, and that is part of it as well.
It's all about, frankly, from her end and my end, and we just interviewed Justine on Triangulation last week, if you want, and I could take a little bit of credit for discovering Justine. She says, and I agree, and it's true for us, that what we do is a community building. It's not viral video. It's community building. Viral video is something that a lot of people and a lot of these teens are good at viral video. But, you know, if you look at her views, some of her things have 15 million. Some of them have 1 million. The vast majority are in the tens and hundreds of thousands of views. That's not where the money is. It's in a lot of other things. It's community building. And Howard has a community. We'll follow him anywhere. But he's already built that. That's done. He doesn't.
But he's sharing it with Sirius.
Yeah, well, that's his decision. I think he made a little money on that deal. $400 million, right?
Well, no, you see, here's the thing. A lot of that money was to be made in stock that they didn't give him.
Well, how much did he make? $100 million?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
So he's okay.
He's not hurting.
No.
He's not going to be the guy who changes the thing. Things and it's not going to be Seinfeld comedians.
No, it's
getting
somebody who comes
along
new. No, that's
true. It's
going to
be
true.
Somebody you never heard of, and it might not even be these kids going around in these showcases at VidCon. That's going to happen regardless. It will happen because how we consume content has changed dramatically.
And right. and back to so I'm trying to buy a new car now because my 11 year old Toyota is near its death. No air conditioning in this weather. I'm about to do it. By the way, I'm thinking about getting an Audi.
Oh, you'll love it.
But I talked about this when you were gone. The problem I have with Jason problem I have is the only car that now has Android Auto is the Hyundai Sonata.
Don't get that. And Android Auto is not such a... It's gingerbread.
No, Android Auto, I thought, was the takeover of your phone.
So we talked about this last week with Kevin Toffel and Ron Amati. Ron wrote his review. You should read his Ars Technica. Very nice review of Android Auto. One of the things he discovers is that the operating system then running in the car is Android Gingerbread.
Wow.
And this is, to me, more telling. Because everybody has to work with the Highway Transportation Safety Board, it's very limited what it can do.
Yeah, that's the problem. Better to put your phone up and just put it in the air vent.
Your phone will do anything you want.
Right.
Yeah. Don't worry about getting it to come show up on the screen in your car. That's, I think, a mistake.
Well, that'll come, but what you want is a Chromecast-like thing, which, to be fair, it is close to being. The Android Auto is that. But you want this thing that is showing from your...
But you'll never see, for instance, you'll never see a lot of apps on that screen because they won't let that happen.
Right, I agree with that. But all I'm saying is this. So the car I have now does not even have an aux plug.
Well, yes, you can get better. Adapter. Just Bluetooth is all you really need. If you get the audio, you're good.
But that's the point. So at that point, do I need Sirius when I have, if I have a limited data plan?
No. Why do you think I don't pay for satellite radio? I have it in every car. If I want music, I listen to Spotify. And by the way, T-Mobile gives you unlimited data. It doesn't charge you for data for for most music, including Apple Music and Spotify. Or Google Music. Yeah. Stream it free. Yes.
Okay. Wow.
Radio's dead. Satellite radio's deader than dead.
Yes.
The whole thing is completely changing because we consume media differently. Last night, I was watching a TV show on cable because I'm an old man. And Michael comes in, who's 12, and we start watching YouTube videos on my big screen because I have an Android TV device, the NVIDIA Shield. And that's what we watch is YouTube videos. That's what he wants to see. I don't think Michael has ever watched a TV show. Ever.
Not since
he was a kid. How about you, Chris? Do you ever watch TV? Chris is 17.
I do watch TV. I don't. I watch HBO. I watch.
Oh, so he's watching some cable channels.
But
you're too old.
Cable.
You're 17 now. You're too old. Yeah. Oh, you don't watch it on cable. You watch it on the internet. Yeah.
Watch it on Netflix. Yeah. But my sons my son got into It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So he watched the whole thing on Netflix from beginning to end.
Exactly.
That was his.
Chris, what do you watch on YouTube? What YouTube? You're not watching the VidCon stars. You're watching something else on YouTube. What do you watch on YouTube?
I watch a lot of regular content. I watch that.
He's too old.
I watch that Let's Play stuff.
That's what he watches, yeah.
Of course.
You're a gamer, but everybody, I think, of your generation.
I watch some vlog stuff. I watch the SciShow channel. I watch, a pretty huge variety.
I look at my son. He's 21. He grew up watching a lot of YouTube video stars. What's the ones where they make disgusting meals? Epic Mealtime. Stuff like that, which I think is juvenile and stupid and not particularly well created or funny, but that's because I'm an old fart.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Hey, we got to take a break. There's so much more I wanted to talk about, but we'll just have to come back and do this next week. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. It's one of the reasons I really like having a weekly show. There is always something to talk about.
Please come back.
And you too, Kevin. I love having you on. We're going to get your picks and your numbers and all that stuff, but first a word from LegalZoom. It is National Make-A-Will Month for a couple of more days. Quickly do it. You don't want the government to decide what happens to your property and your minor children. You want to make sure you plan. Nobody likes to think about this, but, it takes a lot of the sting out if you don't have to pay a $450 an hour lawyer to do it. LegalZoom will help you do the right thing. It's never been easier. A better way for you and your spouse to take control of your family's future. Check out LegalZoom's new will and living trust bundles. The more you plan ahead with wills, trusts, don't forget those powers of attorney, the more you save. LegalZoom's online resources and estate planning tools help you figure out what you need to do. So, there are many options, but they'll help you do it. It's so great. Or you can get more specific guidance from LegalZoom's network of independent attorneys in most states. They're not a law firm, but they will hook you up, which is great, for a pre-negotiated low flat rate. Don't procrastinate. When it comes to protecting your family, this may be the most important thing you do today. Go to LegalZoom.com and enter the offer code TWIG. Set it up. Get that last will done. It's one of the, I got, Lisa's done hers. I got to do mine. Peace of mind for you. Clarity on your future. Even if you're a young person, you need to do this. LegalZoom.com. Please use the offer code TWIG. Kevin, you got something to pick or something you want to suggest?
A couple of indie web things. the first one can be a little challenge for you. So let's see if we can get this working.
Okay.
Reader.carlwm.com.
Say it again. Reader.carl.
Kyle, I'll type it and put it in the chat.
KYLEM.com.
Kyle WM.
WM.
He needs a better.
So this is that newsreader that you guys were talking about or whatever.
Yes, that you saw in the video.
Woodwind.
Woodwind, yes. So go to that. You got to log in. So log in with your known site.
I have my known site set up, and I have all of the right links and the rels and everything done.
So that should work for you.
And okay. The rel equals me. Yep.
Okay, so log in with that.
Okay. You don't have to blur my phone number. Everybody knows it. Okay, because I can get a verification code. Let me do that by a phone. And that's the fastest, easiest way to do this. I love that system, by the way.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
I'll tell you about it afterwards, but there's some twists on that coming too. But log in with that for now. Okay. Known is the easiest way to get this done. So now you've got a feed reader.
Yep.
And you have to follow somebody. You have to put a URL in to follow. And then it gives you feeds. And it'll follow H feeds from IndieWeb people.
So I should join.
You need to go back to where you were. Hang on. What did you?
You've successfully authenticated. Congratulations. What's next? Create a sign-in form to use indieauth.com to sign people in. No. Did I something wrong go wrong?
Something. We'll go back to. it should have redirected you back to reader.carlwm. So.
Sign in to Woodwind. Okay. Just talk about it.
Oh dear.
These things happen. So, but it's RSS feeds that it reads?
It reads H feeds and it reads RSS and Adam feeds, yeah.
Okay, so I've authenticated. Allow indie auth access. Is there a button I should...
You should just be able to pick one of those green ones.
Yeah, I've clicked a few of them now.
No, you don't log into that one as well.
I have to log into this. That's okay, GitHub. Okay. Indie auth sign. Okay, anything else you'd like to talk about?
Oh dear, this isn't working well, is it?
Well, it's early days, yeah.
So.
Stop showing my screen. Let him talk, and okay, I will pursue this a little farther.
Can I show you my screen? Can I do that?
No, don't do that. You will regret it deeply.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to use Twitter now to authenticate, or Google Plus now.
Google Plus usually works fairly well.
Yeah, I keep getting back to this indie auth. I think something's broken. You know what? Here's the problem. Everybody watching the show is doing it, and we probably just broke whatever back end.
I warned Carl that was about to happen.
No, you can warn people, but nobody really fully understands the power of Twit. Yeah, it's not working. So just describe it. I've attempted to authenticate on every platform. It doesn't work.
So basically, it's a feed reader. Once you authenticate with your site, it also gives you the reply like retweet buttons on it. But those post to your own site, so that it means that the replies go to your site, and then the web mentions send them back.
I want more and more ways to pipe things into Leoville.net.
Right. So that's the advantage of that. So that's, if you look at my feed now, known.kevinmarks.com, you'll see that most of it is little responses I've written to other people's posts, because that's how I'm using it now.
Nice. I will start doing this.
So you can see the response to the post. And then if you click through to those posts, you'll see that my comments have appeared on them and so on. So sorry, that was a bit of dance. I'll get you to try off here. One of the things that we are working on with IndieWeb is improving that auth experience, making it simpler for people who've got something installed. Because the initial version of it was assuming you're hosting your own site, so you want to piggyback on someone else's auth, like Google's or Twitter's or whatever. If you're hosting with a site that actually has its own auth, we're going to have a shorter path for that. And Kyle, who built Reader, has been building that with Silopub, so that if you log in with a WordPress site, it'll just use the WordPress author it rather than redirect you through a second author as well. So there's bits of that coming. When we've got that working, I'll come back and show you that.
You know what? I know what's wrong. And Bed told me this. I have to use www.leoville.net.
That's
my bad, my fault.
Okay. So we'll try it again with this.
That's an issue with known.
It's not me.
I know it's, well, it could be me. I don't know. Please enter a URL. Now it really is confused. I think we did break it, actually. Oh, good. So now it's working.
Now it's
right?
Locked in. Okay.
So I could subscribe to my own feeds?
Well, you could do that. That's kind of redundant. You can subscribe to my feed. You can so
listening to himself. It's all right.
At the moment you still. So reply makes.
Now I'll subscribe to you. What is the URL I should use?
Known.kevinmarks.com is me.
So these have to be specially set up.
No, I mean, you put http://in front. Sorry, that's a.
Really? Come on, Kevin. Now, which feed of these?
The top one, the H feed one.
H feed. Okay.
Yeah.
So now, oh, look.
So there's my post. So now go to that settings page link that you went to before.
The what?
At the top, it says settings. top right settings.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Check MicroPub.
Yeah, I support that on my site.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Now I have to go through authorize.
You have to go through authorize again, but you've already done it once, so it should be quick.
Yeah, we'll just do that right through NDAuth.
Yeah, and again, we're going to. This flow is going to get a bit more streamlined.
You feel like we're reinventing the web as
we
go.
How did it redirect back to NDAuth again? What? Okay. We're going to watch this video later.
Let's try it with two slashes and a colon.
I feel like it's all tied together with baling wire and string.
It is a little. Okay. Okay.
Why not just use if this, then that, somebody asked.
If this, then that is a, you know, is the point is we're building a protocol that should work underneath all this.
You can't, everybody is saying, use Facebook, but you don't want to rely on any, you want to rely on an open standard that will work even if Facebook or if this, then that, or yes. Twitter goes out of business.
Exactly. And part of the point is at the moment it's running on your own site. We want to make sure that you can log into these with Facebook or Twitter or WordPress or Tumblr or whatever as well. That stuff is in the works, but.
So if I now go to the Kyle site, I do see I see Woodwind and I see a feed, and I should add more subscriptions to this, and then I can interact with you.
Once you've got the MicroPub thing working.
I'll get the MicroPub thing working. Okay.
I'm sure Kyle will look at this and go, I should improve that process. But the other thing I wanted to show you, which is related but kind of fun, if you go to www.pestagram.com.
Okay. Pestagram.
Pestagram. I'll put that in the.
Okay, no, I got it.
As well. So this is a site I first hacked together 3 years ago as kind of a joke, which it turns Instagram into Pinterest.
Showed this on the show way back then. Yeah,
I like this.
So one of and if you click on, so you put a tag in at the top, then it'll give you the stuff about that tag. Yeah, if you put VidCon, that'll be a good one.
Yeah.
And then you can also click through to people and see their feeds or click through to places and see the place feeds.
Nice.
But the thing I changed this week was that I marked this up with HFeed, which means you can now subscribe to feeds from Instagram per tag in the feed reader. So if you put in, don't put in Twit because that's not going to be a good tag. Put in IndieWeb. That's a decent tag.
Right there?
What's wrong with Instagram? Yeah.
Should I put a hash in front of it?
Yeah, just do that and do return. Okay, so there's the IndieWeb post.
Yeah.
If you copy the URL from that at the top, it's pestagram.com/tag/IndieWeb, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then go back to with known. We go back to the reader and subscribe to that. Then you'll see you get the feed from that.
Ah. So I go to Kyle M's again. Reader.kylewm.com. Subscribe to. We'll paste that in. And of course,
and press return.
Yeah, no.
He's not here. I'm pressing. There we go.
There we go.
Oh, I was just thinking. Oh, neat.
So now it's putting those in as well. And you can see there's a post from Tantec and something like that. And if you had the thing set up, you'd be able to respond to those on your site. But I'm not sure that propagates. I don't think that propagates back to Instagram yet. But it gives you a way of following these things and tracking around.
That's so, part of the problem is that it's not in Twitter or Instagram or Facebook's interest to support any of this stuff because they want to silo everything.
But they have APIs and bridges and things. So that, you know, this the Pestagram site I built by calling Instagram's APIs,
right,
and then just generate them a web page that implements these protocols.
Right.
And similarly, Bridgy implements posting back to Twitter, which
I like Bridgy, which is cool. Yeah,
get with that. And the silo.pub thing that Kyle built lets you post to Tumblr and WordPress and Blogger. So we're sort of gradually building the glue to connect these back to the existing silos. But we're still using these relatively simple protocols underneath. And the challenge is always, how do we authenticate into more than one place? If you've logged into Facebook, you've logged into Facebook once. Whereas with these, if you logged into this, you've got to log in to your own site and then log into Instagram, whatever. So there's always going to be a little bit more friction when you're bridging two things together than having one. But I still think you can give that another try.
Why not? Maybe people have gone away. It should work with IndieAuth, right? That's IndieAuth.
No, don't click IndieAuth. Go back.
Don't click IndieAuth.
That's what you're doing wrong. Okay, go back.
Okay. So Micropub, authorize Micropub, and don't use Twitter or Google. I'll use Google.
Use Google. Google.
It's my Google Plus page.
As long as you're logged into Google, that will work.
Yeah, I am. Maybe I'm just impatient. Maybe it's just a question of impatience, waiting. Oh, it's waiting for IndieAuth. I keep sending. I shouldn't hit it again and again. Poor IndieAuth.
Oh.
While I'm doing this, Jeff, do you have a number?
Yeah, well, I could go on a rant about how a study has found that the Spanish link tax actually hurt media and even killed sites in Spain.
Of course it did.
But that's boring. So instead, what I'm going to do is the thing that's guaranteed to bring phone calls in on any talk show anywhere in America, and that's a discussion of pizza.
Yeah.
So I have the 10 best pizza places in the U.S. according to comments on TripAdvisor.
Oh, that's such BS.
Of course it is.
I already know it's wrong because everybody knows. The best pizza place in America is Pepe's Pizza in New Haven.
No, it's Geno's East in Chicago.
Okay, I'll give you Geno's East.
I went around the country for People magazine back in the day.
You must have gone to Pepe's.
I did, but I still gave it to Geno's.
You like a deep dish though. That's different.
Well, that was pretty amazing deep
dish. Yeah, but it's a different thing. It's not even pizza. That's a deep dish. Juliana's in Brooklyn. I'll have to go there. Pizza Time in St. Augustine, Florida, I can almost guarantee is not. Moose's Tooth Pub and Pizzeria in Anchorage, Alaska, number three.
That pizza, that's illegal as pizza.
That's not even pizza. That's a BLT.
Bacon.
Moose's Tooth Pub and
romaine, cilantro jalapeno mayo. That should be illegal.
This is what's wrong, by the way, with Yelp. Even Zagat. The reviews are from people who live around there. And yes, I bet you it is the best pizza in Anchorage.
Which says nothing.
Says nothing. Have you ever been to Kesty, New York?
No,
New York?
But it looks good.
That's a nice looking calzone.
That one looks nice.
Tony's Pizza Napolitana in San Francisco.
That's a good one. I recommend that one.
Never even heard of it.
No, it's if you want actual Italian pizza, it's really good. He basically makes the dough fresh, makes Italian pizzas.
It looks good.
And he stops when he's sold the dough he's made for the day.
I always go to Tommaso's, so I'll have to try Tony's.
It's more central than what you call it. It's not in the Italian neighborhood, whatever that's called.
It's in the heart of San Francisco's Little Italy, according to this.
Oh,
I didn't even know San Francisco. Oh, you mean North Beach? Is that what you're talking about?
It's in North Beach. Hang on.
It's not in North Beach.
Is that the one I'm thinking of?
Yeah, it is in North Beach. You know what? It's where North Beach Pista used to be.
Oh, no. I'm thinking of Una Pizza Napolitania.
Yeah. This used to be North Beach Pizza. All right. Now we're really losing the audience.
So this one's at 11th Street, 11th and Howard. And this one is really good.
Oh, 11th and Howard. Yeah. It's got to be good. It's under a freeway.
When I used to appear on Ron Owen's show on KGO back in the day, many years ago.
Ron's an old friend. Ron. Love Ron.
Yeah, Ron's great. And whenever the phone lines look dead,
pizza.
I'd always say, you know, this town doesn't have any decent pizza.
Boom. Boom. There we go.
Yeah. There are certain tricks that every talk show host knows.
Yeah.
All right. I think we're just really way out of time. I apologize. We had an hour late start. I apologize to everybody involved. I will get MicroPub working, and I will start playing with this because I think it's very intriguing. If people want to know more about IndieWeb, what's the best way to find out, Kevin?
Come to Homebrew Website Club, as I said, or IndieWebCamp.com.
IndieWebCamp.com.
Yes.
And then get a known site up and running, either self-hosted or at withknown.com.
The easiest way to get started is to go to withknown.com and get your own site there.
Yep, yeah. I agree.
I'm going to give you one more number, if I may, just to end off the week here. So First Round Capital is 10 years old, and they did a survey of their companies, and they found, I'll just give you this one finding, it's at 10years.firstround.com, that companies with a female founder perform 63% better than their investments with all male founding teams.
No kidding.
Ah, there you go.
No kidding. Meanwhile, the chat room is now debating the merits of pizza.
Pizza, yes. I said, that's what I did to you, yes.
Does Lisa count as a female founder? I think she does. So there you go.
There you go.
Hey, thank you very much, Kevin Marks, for joining us. As always, KevinMarks.com, at Kevin Marks on Twitter. Subscribe to him on IndiePub using your Indie Auth credentials and the Willow Reader, and you'll be happy you did.
Woodwind Weeda.
It was a Woodwind Weeda. Weeda.woodwind. We want to thank Mr. Jeff Jarvis for spending his evening with us.
Good to have you back, boss, and good to be back with you.
I missed you. I'm really glad to see you. Thank you for holding down the fort when I was gone, and always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. Jason Howell is our producer and technical director. Thank you, Jason. Job well done, as
thank
I said.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, sir.
Best way to learn
thank
about Android, guys. All about Android, every Tuesday night.
I like to think so.
I think so. Excellent show last night.
Thanks.
We do this show every Wednesday, supposed to be 1 p.m. Pacific. I think it's really more like 1:30 and sometimes even later. That would be 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2000 UTC, live.twit.tv, or get it after the fact. On-demand audio and video always available after the show. Twit.tv/twig, youtube.com/thisweekingGoogle, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for joining us. Hey, we'll see you next time
on Twig.